Episode 3498 of the Survival Podcast, meaning unless some kind of earth-shattering event occurs, we will have episode 3500 on Thursday with the Expert Council show. We barely made it this week after last week just got toe up from the floor up, especially being a little bit short this week because Monday, of course, was Memorial Day. And I did put out a rewind episode yesterday, and that will be the Memorial Day episode unless I ever choose to make a new version of it, pointing out something I think is important if you're going to recognize Memorial Day. It's not for veterans. It's not for wounded warriors. Memorial Day is for people that went off in conflict under the banner of the United States of America, died and never came home alive. They came home or they didn't come home at all. One way or another, but, you know, gone, unalived. And I want to say something here that was part of that episode yesterday, but I know many of you probably don't listen to those little rewinds like that. There is this whole group of people out there that think that, you know, and I'm not talking about people that are, like, opposed to anything recognizing the military and all. That's a different group of people. I'm talking about people that, like, recognize Memorial Day for what it is, and they do understand what I just said. But they have this idea that maybe we should all mourn on Memorial Day. We should all sit around with ashes on our head and sackcloth on ourselves or something like that. I heard some talking head simpleton on the TV this weekend say, well, maybe take the children to the graveyard in the morning and then, you know, have a hot dog in the backyard that afternoon. You know what? If you want to go by a military cemetery or something like that as part of the day, that's great and all. But I don't have any problem with Memorial Day being a day off, spending with family and being enjoyable and being a long weekend. If we are to have any faith in the past anyway, in the role that our military has played in this country, then that's what they're actually fighting for. They're not fighting for your right to vote, you know, or whatever other bullshit that they make up. They're fighting for the rights, at least in their belief at their core, to protect the American way of life. And there's probably nothing more American than a family sharing food together in a backyard. So I have no problem with that way that things go. Anyway, let's talk. What are we going to talk about today? It won't be any of that. We're going to talk about the fact that Donald Trump and RFK both spoke at the Libertarian National Convention, which is kind of odd in all honesty. But the Libertarians completely rejected the Orange Man after he said he's going to free Ross Ulbricht. And they selected a complete moron, like a total like left wing lunatic, who actually happens to actually be a little bit better on the liberty side of things, but basically a left wing activist, like a cultural left wing activist, as their nominee, showing that they don't really stand on principle here. They stand on, I guess, maybe the principle of losing. L for the Libertarian Party, big L, has stopped meaning libertarian a long time ago. It means losers. And I'm sorry, I don't want that to be the case, but we'll talk about that. And we are going to talk about, like, this is a choice to lose. And this is why the Libertarian Party should just get out of politics. Just get out of politics because you're not right for the game. Now, I got out of politics, right? I don't vote. I don't do these things. I believe we can have a bigger difference outside of politics. But if you're going to play in the political arena, then your goal should be to win something, to get something. You'll never get everything you want in politics. You'll never get close. But when you have an opportunity to close a deal on something you say you really, really want, then if you actually mean to win, you take the opportunity. But the Libertarian Party is incapable of that. We have spent about $320 million. Some people say it's more like $500 million on a temporary pier in Gaza that's now falling apart and sinking to the bottom of the ocean. Yay us. In 2024, there are now four stages of journalism. This little video this guy did, I loved it. I'm going to play it for you. It's so short, I may let it run through twice. But the four stages of journalism today are gaslight, dismiss, cope, attack. And when I play this guy's video, I think that you'll see like at least 10 events that have occurred in the last 4 years that fit this pattern perfectly. I won't even have to explain to you what they are, but one might have to do something with the stabby stabs and the lockdowns over a cold and all of that stuff. I'm going to talk a little bit about what I think Noster needs to move beyond just being a Twitter clone. There was a post somebody made there, and I'm like, I really like what this guy's saying, and I think there needs to be some other things, and I'm going to talk about that because there just might be some coders in this audience that maybe can think about how there can be, like, NIPs, which are Noster Improvement Protocols, or whatever they're called, the means by which we add features to and improve Noster, that might be able to do something with it. Because I think we're going to, if we're going to make it anything more than just Twitter clones, like there is a real problem that Noster has that I think is only a matter of coding to fix it. But it's somebody has to care enough to want to do it. Next up, Ethereum. Ethereum has had ETFs approved, like a buttload, like 8 of them already approved. None of them are trading yet. Like this happened so fast, I think even people like BlackRock are like, wait a minute, you said yes? What does that mean? What does that mean? The Bitcoin space is not happy about this. The Bitcoin only, Bitcoin maximalist people are not happy. And some of them are even trying to pull what I would call like a Peter Schiff to spin this as though it could be bad for Ethereum. And the point they're making could be true, but it sounds an awful lot like what Schiff said about Bitcoin and ETFs. And I don't think it's the case. And I think that those of you like me who in your former days maybe stacked a bunch of Ethereum when it was really cheap and you've just kind of held on to it because you have so much gain in it, this may be your exit strategy eventually here. But we'll see. I'm even going to talk about, like, is there anything that Ethereum could do for humanity that Bitcoin can't? And I don't know that there is, but maybe. Or maybe something it might be better at. But right now, Ethereum doesn't do anything. But there is one place where maybe, I don't think an ETF has anything to do with this, but maybe it could do something. And I think it is doing something. It's just not really very well, but maybe it could. I don't know. It would take the government really getting out of the way, though, which is not usually the way these things happen. But anybody says it's not a good thing to have a publicly traded ETF or a crypto in the United States, one of the largest markets in the world, I think is just like sour grapeing it. Whether I like Ethereum or not doesn't change that. Russia has started taking territory exactly as I had predicted about 3 weeks ago. About 3 weeks ago, I came on the air and I said, you're about to see new offensives on the side of Russia. These little towns and stuff on the border inside the Donetsk region, they'll fall. Like every time Russia decides to take one, they're just going to take it. And now it's happening. And now I'm going to tell you what comes next. And I've already mentioned this before, but I'm going to go a little deeper into today because I think it's time for us to be real with ourselves about what's about to happen. So when it happens and you see it happen, kind of like I think I'm going to be like 90% accurate in the way this is going to happen. Then maybe the next time we have something like this happen and I say, here's the real story, I won't have my own people telling me I'm a fucking idiot. We'll see. All right. Because seem to get most of these things right. We're going to talk briefly about the Trump verdict that is due probably sometime this week. I don't know. It could take longer. But I'm going to tell you why I think the left has really fucked themselves with this. And this isn't pro-orange, man. This is just anti-government and anti-leftist and anti-lawfare. Love or hate Trump, I think if you believe that this current trial is anything other than political bullshit, that you are delusional or you're not very smart or you're both. They have yet to state even what the actual secondary crime that turns a misdemeanor into a felony is clearly and articulately. And there's still a good chance that they are going to get a conviction here. I think it's a lower chance than people think, but I think it's still relatively possible, including a hung jury and the judge just basically tossing out the jury and issuing his own verdict. And this asshole is the kind of person that would probably do that. But I don't think there's a good outcome for the left. I think Trump gets cleared, exonerated, hung jury, whatever, the case is over. Bad for the left. Trump gets convicted, spends one day in jail, really bad for the left. I don't know that there's a good outcome for the left now. This is like one of the dumbest miscalculations of all time. We'll see when I cover this if you guys agree with me. And then, you know, I said today's show is about the last days of empire. And these topics should be really self-explanatory, but I'm going to remind you of the six primary characteristics, common characteristics of empires failing. If you look back through history, all the way back to the earliest records of empire, There's six things that every empire that goes into decline have in common. And every time it's ever happened, these six things have been there. And I'm just going to read them and we'll discuss them briefly as we wrap up. And you tell me which one, if any, are not part of America that we have today. With that, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day, number one today, is Start 9 Embassy Servers, where you can be your own everything. Start 9 is the company that will put you back in charge of your data, your way, and help you understand that the fact that there is no such thing as the cloud. There is no cloud, guys. It doesn't exist. The cloud is just a fancy name for somebody else's computer. That's all the cloud is, which means somebody else has your records and controls what you access, and someone controls whether or not you can get your own files back or who you're allowed to talk to or who your data is reported to. But with Start 9, you can be your own everything. It's really not hard. If you can use a smartphone, you can use a Start 9 Embassy server. You can have end-to-end encrypted messaging. You can access your files anonymously from anywhere in the world. You control who's part of your networks and who isn't. And you don't have any reporting going off to the government about, I don't know, your pictures of your cat or whatever else you're doing. You can also run your own Bitcoin node, your own Bitcoin Lightning node. You can run BT Pay Server, replace and become your own bank for real. So much you can do with a Start 9 server, and 9% off for all members of the MSB. Next up today is JM Bullion. I am a Bitcoin bull. I really am. I think it's probably the best investment you can make right now, but I have never said to stop considering stacking silver and or gold in your life. I am a big silver bull as well. Silver's had a pretty good year so far this year, hasn't it? It's up over $30 an ounce right now. Whenever I'm going to stack more silver, I always go to JM Bullion. They've been sponsoring this show for 10 years. They do a discount for MSB members, and they have better pricing out of the gate than like Monex and Atmex and Lear Capital. I can speak right to the owner of the company if necessary, which I almost never have to do. They're just a great partner and have been so, again, for more than a decade. And your orders will ship free to your door with JM Bullion. Check them out today for, you know, everything from your standard, like, Silver Eagles to some really cool rounds with some great stories behind them. And what a great way to start building the concept of hard money in the minds and hearts of children. I really believe that it is a good idea to teach sound money, hard money, and real value to our kids. And I really believe that Bitcoin is actually a superior form of value reserve because it is digital. It's programmable money. But there is something for being able to hold something in your hand, not because I'm afraid somebody's going to flip a switch, but because when you put something in the hand of a kid, the tangibility of it makes sense to them. And, you know, like we got my grandson and granddaughter cool little boxes to keep their silver and stuff in. It's a cool way to start teaching kids about this. So let's talk about libertarians rejecting the orange man and this idiot, this Chase Oliver idiot that they've nominated. And I don't really care so much about what the Libertarian Party does. I was a member of the LP in the early 2000s. I ran for office as a member of the LP in 2006. And by 2008, I'm like, what am I doing with these people? These people are going nowhere and they're accomplishing nothing. And so I separated myself. And soon after that, I went from saying I was a big L libertarian to a small L libertarian to I'm an anarchist, right? I just don't trust government at all. But I understand the political process. And if you're going to play a game, you have to understand the rules of that game. And then you have to accept your limitations within that game. And then you pick something that you can win in that game and you go get it. So here's what happened for those who didn't see. RFK Jr. and Trump were both invited to speak at the Libertarian Convention. Neither of them obtained the nomination, and neither of them probably should have, because neither one of them are actual libertarians. Now, if you want my honest assessment of RFK Jr. and Donald Trump and which one is closer to libertarian ideals, it is the orange man. It is Trump. I am sorry. I'm not going to get into it today, but just because I agree with some of the things that Bobby Kennedy says does not mean he's not a giant, huge government liberal. And every solution he has to every problem is more power and money for government. Perfectly explains regulatory capture, but it'll be different this time, right? It's not going to happen, and the guy's not going to win. So anybody that's going to tell me, well, RFK, okay, great, not going to win. Anybody's going to tell me, but the Libertarian Party needs to nominate, not going to win. This is a two-horse race. It's Biden and Trump. And odds right now are on Trump. And not because I say so or CNN says so or Fox says so. Because the most accurate predictor of presidential elections historically has been the odds makers in Vegas and what odds are being offered on what candidate to win office. So unless they helicopter Newsom in or something and change the calculus, right now the odds are Donald Trump's going to win. Doesn't mean he will. Doesn't mean they might not cheat like they never cheated before or something like that, right? But that's the odds. So you got that. You just accept that. Now you're the Libertarian Party. And one of the most important things that you've put out into the public for a decade now has been free Ross Ulbricht. Okay? Donald Trump comes into your convention because you asked him to. He didn't force his way into anything. He speaks and he says, if you throw your support behind me, if I become president, I'm going to free this guy that you say you want free. And I know what people are going to say. Well, I don't trust him. Well, this is what I'll say about Trump. 90%+ of everything that man said he was going to do if he became president in 2016 that was doable by him alone, he did. So that's a pretty decent track record. He also probably would want to make a big splash doing it again right out of the gate. He is an attention whore. When he makes a promise like that, especially if it gets momentum, he feels a lot of compulsion to do it. So I think there was a really good possibility to say, well, wait a minute here. What else do we want? See, this is how politics works. I know some of you are going to start telling me, but, you know, libertarians are supposed to be different. No. It's fucking politics, guys. All right? So this is what you do. There is no more of a kind of set up, decide, and tell everybody what they're going to do than a libertarian convention. Like the conventions run by the Democrats and the Republicans that use the primary voting to select candidates are probably far less subject to bullshit, right? And I know what they did to Ron Paul, but guys, as much as I love Ron Paul, he wasn't going to win the nomination anyway. Okay, he wasn't. He never got enough votes in any of the primaries. It wasn't going to happen. So you really can't make the case that, even though it's a skewed thing, that the Republicans and Democrats don't actually take the person that wins the primaries and make them their presidential pick, right, as a standard operation. But there's a lot of conniving that can be done because you wouldn't have a Chase Oliver, which, by the way, here's this guy. I'm not saying that Donald Trump is a libertarian for my special children. I'm saying that if this is who the Libertarian Party selects, then they're not standing on their principles as libertarians. Okay? This guy's claim to fame, this Chase Oliver's claim to fame, is that he forced a runoff in the Georgia election, which was directly the reason why the Democrats have control of the Senate right now. Woohoo, we won. Yay, look at us. So you already know this clown isn't going to get maybe 3% of the vote. That's what Trump said, and he's right. He probably will get less than that. The Libertarians haven't had a significant impact on a presidential election ever. Okay? They have this thing that they want. If you were actually playing the political game for the sake of winning anything, when Trump said that, there would have been immediate back channel discussion. How do we make sure you're actually going to do this? And here's some other things we want. Here's five. Pick three. Pick two more out of this list of five total, free Ross being non-negotiable, that we also want. Is it, you know, pardon Assange? Is it Snowden? Is it something else? He also said, I'll put some people that are libertarian LP members into government, into positions, into my cabinet, something like that. Okay, let's talk about that. Let's commit to this. And what if he backstabs you and lies like all politicians? You take a shot at the possible and the probable, or don't play fucking politics. The Libertarian Party is, honest to God, the biggest bunch of political losers on planet Earth. They may be good people. They may mean well. They may have some nice ideas. But it doesn't matter. You can't win. You can't win the way that they play the game. And honestly, I'll tell you who plays the game best is Democrats. Democrats play the game better than Republicans, and Republicans play the game better than Libertarians. And what I'm talking about there is not getting elected. What I'm talking about there is getting shit done. Democrats know how to get what they want out of a Republican-controlled House. And they do. And you say, well, it's because the Rhinos are... It doesn't matter. Who's getting what they want the most? The left is. And the left is getting what they want the most for the same reason the Libertarians can't get shit done. The left is a collective, and Libertarians are individualistic. You get 100 leftists together, and they will spend 90% of their time talking about the 90% of the shit that they agree with. Okay? If you get a bunch of Libertarians together, they will spend 90% of their time talking about the 10% of things that they disagree with. And that's why they can't get anything done. Now, I'm all for focusing on what you disagree with if you want to. I'm all for being individualistic and rugged. I'm all for putting your principles over your preference. But the minute you say you want to play politics, it all has to go out the window. Jack, no, it doesn't. We need to take our... And you will lose. And you will get fucking nothing done. You will get nothing done. I look at this and I say, I am not in love with the idea of Donald Trump 2.0 presidency. Okay? If it will result in Ross Ulbricht being let out of prison and he doesn't die in a federal prison, I am all in. And if he doesn't do it, then he doesn't do it. But you know who won't do it? Biden won't do it. Newsom won't do it. Kamala Harris won't do it. Not might not do it, will not do it. And RFK, he probably would do it, but he can't win. Do what you want with that information, but all I do is look at this and go, I'll put it this way. Babylon Bee had a little piece out on this, like making some fun of the way the Libertarian Party handled Trump. And it said Donald Trump booed at Libertarian Party for wearing deodorant. And I think there might be just a little bit to that. All right, so let's go ahead and move on. Let's talk about what's going on in Gaza. And I don't have a link pulled up for that, so I don't know that I want to try to find one. But the United States government decided so that we can provide aid to Gaza, food and medicine, blah, 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 blah. But we don't want to put boots on the ground in Gaza because now we're involved in the Israeli conflict and maybe they're pretty pissed at us, so some of them might shoot at us. I know what we'll do. We'll put a pier in. And that way we can just pull up ships and dump off all the supplies and not put boots on the ground. And we don't have time to build, like, a permanent super pier, so we'll put in a temporary pier. Only the United States government could spend $320 million or more doing this, because that's the bare minimum that was spent on this, $320 million, and the whole thing is falling apart and sinking into the ocean already because they had a few storms. Who could have imagined that a phony fake pier that floats on the water, moored to the shore, could be damaged in a storm? In fact, I think like two or three of U.S. Navy vessels right now are like anchored like really shallow water in the coast waiting for the weather to clear so that we can get like other ships in there and pull them out. We have like two or three U.S. naval vessels stranded off the coast of Gaza, sitting there, unable to move. I don't know what else could go wrong. Now, I want you to think about this for my end piece today on the collapse of empires, because I'm going to give you one of them now. One is military defeat is one of the commonalities of collapsing empires. And I think there's a lot of people that think the United States got a military, doesn't get defeated. It gets defeated all the time. When you try to build a fucking temporary pier to drop off food and medicine and it sinks into the ocean and you just pissed away $320 million in a nation where people that work full time now are not even sure that they can afford groceries for their kids, that would be a military style. Your military got defeated by water, not even the enemy. There's many other examples. But $320 million just basically wasted. And the numbers that I'm getting of the true cost are more north of $500 million. So half a billion dollars. You know, that's real money. You know, there's a lot of things that we could fix in this country with $300 to $500 million. A lot. And where did that money come from? Where did that money come from? That $320 million. Did we just have that laying around? Or is that more money that we printed? Your great-grandchildren will pay on that money. Anyone can golf says it's a rounding error. We're at the point now there's no more rounding errors. We're at that. See, the problem, and this is the truth, up until very recently, you could make that argument on some of these things, but we've reached a point of such compounding on the interest and the debt that it all hurts. It all hurts. We start talking hundreds of millions and up. It's not a rounding error anymore. No, it is. It's just adding to, it's an aggravating circumstance to an ongoing disaster. Moving on, when I heard this guy, I'm like, oh my God, this is pattern recognition on steroids here. And it's very short and brief, but it's a gentleman. He seems to be speaking with a British accent, whether he actually has one or he just did it for the video, I don't know. But give this guy a listen. This is the four stages of journalism today.
That's not true, and it's definitely not really happening. Yeah, it's happening, but it's not a big deal. That thing that's happening is actually a good thing, and here's why. People freaking out about the thing that's happening are the real problem here.
So on that one, I realize that those of you who are not in the video and are just listening to the audio may not have gotten the four introductory texts with each one of those segments. So let me read them to you. The first one is gaslight. The second one is dismiss. The third one is cope. And the fourth one is attack. And let's listen to it again with that in mind.
That's not true, and it's definitely not really happening. Yeah, it's happening, but it's not a big deal. That thing that's happening is actually a good thing, and here's why. People freaking out about the thing that's happening are the real problem here.
All right, so I don't want to go straight into all of the things that were part of the COVIDs that this fits perfectly. I don't need to get demonetized the first new show back after being gone for so long. I don't need to get put in suspension by the YouTube police or whatever. Let's talk about something else that this fits perfectly, though, with. How about inflation? How about inflation? Think of how the mainstream narrative on inflation went, okay? There is an inflation problem. It's just a word that conservative media taught you, yeah? Okay? It's not, there isn't any. And then it's transitory. There is some inflation, but, you know, it's not really a big deal because it's just transitory. Then we had the cope, right? Inflation is happening. Here's why it's a good thing. I literally read headlines on the air, especially left-wing media, telling you that inflation was good. And then did they not say it was your fault? Did they not blame people for? I guarantee if somebody right now that's in the live chat starts Googling, you'll be able to find things where it explains that it's your fault. You spend too much money. You're willing to pay for things that you shouldn't be willing to pay for. You know, it's your fault that there's inflation. Gaslight, it's not happening. Dismiss, well, it's happening, but it's not a big deal. Cope, well, it is happening. Here's why it's a good thing. And then attack, it is happening. It is a bad thing, but it's your fault. If you want to look at the narratives that the U.S. media put out about Russia, right? Putin has no chance of winning. His tanks don't even work. He's literally running out of bullets, and there are no Nazis in Ukraine, right? Well, actually, we need a shitload of money because the Russians are blowing shit up, and it turns out that their weapons do work, but they are still going to lose. It's not – they're still running out of bullets, and, you know, but it's – you know, it, yeah, now we need to at least do – oh, there's Nazis, but they're good Nazis, right? They have their roots with Nazis. They're not real Nazis, okay? They have swastikas and all, and now it's, but it's your fault. If we would have just gave them more faster, they would have won. It's the same shit. It's the same shit. This is the classic Fnord in stages. And for those that have never heard me talk about this before, Fnord comes from a thing called Principa Discordia. All hail Discordia, right? All hail Discord. And then it was really made famous when it was referenced as such in the book The Illuminatus Trilogy by Robert Shea and Robert Anton Wilson, who are both anarchists, by the way. And it is totally worth checking out that book. Because the bigger thing that that book, I think, will teach you, because it's got some weird sci-fi level shit in it and some other stuff too. But the part that really, I think, hits home with truth is in this book, there's all these organizations. There's organizations that are similar to, like, you know, MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving. But they're even more like, you know, kind of conservative, women-led, like traditionalist, you know, type things. And then there's like completely total, like civil rights motivated ones. And there's like all these organizations. There's this really high level libertarian group of renegades led by a dude named Hagbard Saleen, who is the captain of a submarine that has a talking dolphin in it. That's where they got the idea for SeaQuest, okay, or Ocean Quest, or whatever it was in 80s, 90s time. Like the whole Lee Harvey Oswald and JFK assassination, by the time you get to that part of the book, there's like eight different people all lined up to take a shot. You still don't know which one actually took the shots. It's a crazy book. But the big thing is all these organizations that all think that they have an agenda that is specific to what they want, and most of them see all these other organizations as opposed to them. They're all actually working for the same people, and they're all moving things in the same direction, even though they seem diametrically opposed to each other. And in this book, there are characters who begin to see the truth, which is that the media lies in plain sight all the time. Gelman amnesia would be one of the things that we could bring into that from Michael Crichton. But it's just really that when you look even at a headline, you should be able to tell right away this is a lie. And as these characters wake up, before woke was the thing, and they ruined that word, some of them will run around saying, I see the Fnords, I see the Fnords. And the real lesson is there, once you see the Fnords, you can never not see the Fnords again. Unless you choose Gelman amnesia. And Gelman amnesia, for those that haven't heard me talk about it, again, the phrase coined by Michael Crichton, who's the guy that did Jurassic Park. He also wrote ER. Really, really smart dude. So Gelman amnesia is when you read something in a newspaper, and it's about something that you know about. You're very well informed about it. So you know that the author, like, gets everything wrong and that their conclusions are complete bullshit. And you're like, this is not even journalism. This is some kind of stupid agenda, bullshit-driven crap here. And you turn the page, and there's a subject in the next article that you're not well informed about, that you don't know any specifics on. But they made you think it was important, so you read it, and because they use big words and they cite experts, etc., you believe it. And the amnesia comes in between page one and page two. You forgot what you knew, which is this source can't be trusted to be accurate with information. Imagine somebody comes to you and gives you information all the time, and they turn out to be a terrible source. But whenever the information they're giving you is something you want to hear, or if it's something that you don't know anything about, you trust them even though you know that they have been consistently wrong. That's the media. That's the media. And that's this. I mean, it's a perfect thing. Gaslight, dismiss, cope, attack. It's almost like they have a formula for it. Because here's my thing. When you see patterns consistently, there is a reason for the pattern existing. Right. One of the patterns we see consistently is when humans start constructing large monolithic things that they make pyramids. Now, some people want to say that's probably because aliens came and said the pyramid is sacred or something like that. Well, the actual pattern there is when you're trying to build something really big and tall, that the bigger the base and the more narrow the top, the higher you can tend to go and have it not fall down. That's the pattern. So that was a engineering pattern that was chosen. We see patterns repeat in nature, though. And it's because they biologically work within the ecosystem that they're in. Okay. Whenever you see a pattern, there's a reason for it. So then the question is this a natural evolving pattern, like the way a lizard works? And most lizards are capable of dropping their tails. So that probably was designed either by a creator or by a biological process or a combination thereof. But it wasn't like a team of engineers sat down and said, what if we designed the lizard to drop its tail? Yeah, right. But if we're looking at something that is human created, right, that is human controlled, that has people that sign off on things at every level before they actually get released, that is under the control of large, you know, money, why do you think, again, that the pharmaceutical companies advertise on Fox News all the time? Do you think they really think recycling a 60s jingle and having some fat lady dance back and forth and tell you how great it is that she's lowering her A1C with some freaking medication that's probably going to destroy your digestive processes? Do you think it really sells more drugs? Or do you think it's just a way that they can – guys, it's money laundering. It's money laundering. If the drug companies went to Fox News and said, we're going to pay you to put positive spin on all our stories and did it overtly – they would have all kinds of trouble legally, right? But if they're buying advertising time and they say, hey, we don't like the way you're talking about us, maybe we're not going to have that, so that's totally acceptable. It's the same shit. These rich people make these modern art. All it is like you can buy this piece of artwork and you get political favors for it, but it looks legal. Then you can insure it, and then you can borrow against it and get your money back out. It's all a scam. It's all the same scam repeated over and over and over again. And if you can't see it yet, I don't really know what else to tell you. I would say at this point, any person that trusts in general the media at all is either willfully ignorant or has an IQ in the 80s and probably lower. You're getting close to that 75 number if you actually trust them at this point. I think most of it's willful ignorance. Next up, I did want to talk a little bit about Noster with you today and just kind of prime the pump out there for maybe anybody that has coding capability to start thinking about this. I have a link. I'm not going to read this. But basically, one of the people that I follow said that event kinds are not going to get us there. Noster needs an open architecture rather than a central NIP repo for apps to implement and share their own other stuff content. And I said, we need it, but we still need to be able to like kind and differentiate on files basis kinds and stuff like that. And here's where I'm going with this. I would love to see essentially a TikTok version of Noster, something that's designed for short form video content to be binged. Because that's what TikTok is. It's you know, I watch people do it. They're like, they watch a video, they watch another video. This one's stupid. This one I'm going to actually listen to. And they get a lot of information fast from a lot of different sources. Some people are getting information like political information in news. Some people are getting information on, like, how to cook steak. And some people are getting information that they just find entertaining, like people that bust on people. Some people are building varieties into their feeds. And this isn't pro or anti-TikTok. This is one real-world application of being able to share information in a specific format of content. And a person would say, well, what prevents that on Noster right now? You can post videos to Noster. Yeah, but I can post a whole bunch of other shit too. So when I go to TikTok, if I want to upload a picture that's just a static picture, I have to at least play the game and make a video out of it. So the picture will be there with like audio running in the background or some kind of effect or something, right? Like it has to fit the format of what is preferred by the observer using that platform. And there's a lot of other types of information and data exchange out there in various other formats. Facebook has a much more like the ability to create groups and communities and subcommunities and have easily the ability to differentiate of I'm looking at all this content from this one group right now. And this post that was made 5 days ago that I've just found, all the connections to it are comments in it, and it's further categorized inside this group or what have you. That is different than how Twitter works. Though Twitter is trying to create communities by basically having a community and a community manager and then a tab where you can see just from that community. But this is going to, I think, have some true problems. Then we have sites like YouTube, which are for everything from short to very long form video content. And then we have applications like the ability to have something that would compete with like Substack. And there is one called, I think it's called Blogstack. And I've posted some articles to it, but that's for long form writing. But when I post there, it grabs it and throws it into all the feeds that anybody follows me on any other place on Noster, including, you know, 90% of it's all this short form stuff. And I think this is an issue, and I don't really know what the solution is, but I think there should be some way to say, this is this type of content, whatever that means. And then client creators can either say, I don't want to display that type of content in my, you know, generalized Twitter-like, X-like feed, or I want to segment it out so that maybe you do have a client, and then that one client, let's say Primal Mobile, I could be in there and just look at my general Twitter-type feed, but I could also look at my TikTok-style feed and maybe more of my community feed or maybe more of my long-form article content and have better ways to parcel it out. Because some things are just not going to work. When Noster first happened, Tom and I were researching it. We found this cool little light app. We threw it on my website. And what it was supposed to do is you guys could go to the survivalpodcast.com and have on-the-fly chats. Well, what happened was every single note, because that's what they are, ended up everywhere and all discombobulated from the original truncated thread so that people were getting stuff in their feeds that made no sense, like, yes, I agree. Maybe we should try that, with no idea what that was. So that didn't work. So I think that we need to, within that Noster universe, need to start creating ways to break out different styles of content into different ways of consuming that content and distributing that content. And I know what people are going to say, well, if you run relays, you can pick the relays and do this. And maybe the relay operators are part of the solution long term, but then they still need a way, like you're not going to have somebody manually curating, oh, this is short form video content. That's not going to happen. We need some way to automate this. And I'll tell you why it's important and I'm spending time on it today. We need to radically transform the dynamic by which people are rewarded for the creation and curation of content in the world. And if we do not, we will never break free of everything we were just complaining about in the last component, the last segment about the media. Until we have a way that people really can cut straight past any gate keeper and go straight to the people who they value with their exchange of value, we're not going to get anywhere. We're not going to change the dynamic until we get there. And right now, doing it in a Twitter flow style on Noster works perfectly, but everything else doesn't. Everything else doesn't. And this makes perfect sense because when the protocol was created, the first clients, they went exactly that way. Now, there are some clients that are starting to do things like, well, I'll put everything with an image over here for you to look at as like a Instagram before it became really a video platform. And so some people are doing that, but it's still, it doesn't work the way that it needs to work yet. Builder of Castles says Theta is already doing this. I don't know what Theta is. Is it a Noster component or is it a totally separate thing? And I think that that's important, but since I don't know, I'm not going to speak on that. Maybe I'll come back if he gives me something on it. I want to move on, though, and I want to talk about the ETH ETF. And this is a very interesting thing to me. This all came really, really quickly. It went from, like, over this last week being something that was going to happen most likely now, it would only be a formality from here, to flat out it's done. And I think 8 firms had their proposed Ethereum ETFs approved. I don't think any of them are trading yet. And I have been asked quite a bit, like, well, what does this mean? Is it as big a deal as the Bitcoin ETF, et cetera? Like, does it mean everything you said about Bitcoin for Ethereum now? I would say no. If you are an Ethereum person, if you are a fan of Ethereum, there is no way this is not good news. There is no way that this isn't good news. Because you are opening the same walls of money to Ethereum now that were open to Bitcoin. And if you have people like BlackRock that now have both, they want to sell both. And so their marketing people are going to push into things like 401k plans and SEP IRAs and stuff like that. Places where people have limited amounts of things they can select from. And BlackRock at all really ain't done that yet, but they are beginning to do it in earnest. I'm starting to hear from people that are expecting that, like, next open enrollment for their benefits, these things will be added to their plans and things like that. So that will be good. And the question then becomes, and this is the way some of the Bitcoin people are trying to spin it, and there might be something here, but I see a little bit of sour grapes, Peter Schiff type thing. So for years, as we were leading up to the Bitcoin ETFs, Schiff said, like, no matter what happened, it was bad for Bitcoin, because that's just the way he talks, right? Like, that's just bullshit. That's how he gets attention at this day and age. And so he said, if the ETF, we think it's going to get approved, and it doesn't, it'll be bad for Bitcoin. But then if it does get approved and people don't buy enough of it, it'll be bad for Bitcoin. So both ways, it's bad for Bitcoin. And, of course, he's full of shit, as always. But there is that spin being put on this a little bit about Ethereum. But what if all these Ethereum ETFs are let out? And unlike the Bitcoin ETFs, which became the most successful ETF launch ever, it's a wah-wah. It doesn't get a lot of traction. That people buy the news and never sell the rumor, because the rumor ends up being worse than the news. Like, is there that potential? I would say there is some. I do not think there will be the massive amount of capital inflows into ETH ETFs that there was into Bitcoin. There's a reason that Ethereum is still number two, and way number two, because it doesn't really do anything. And people can understand Bitcoin really simply for what it is. It's money. Like, when it comes down to it, what is Bitcoin? It's a way to understand value, to put full limits on the known quantity, to have an absolute guarantee of scarcity, and to act in a way that prevents counterfeiting with the most secure network in the world, and two people can transfer value from one place to another and no one can stop it. Well, that's all true about Ethereum. No, it's not. Ethereum has a foundation. Ethereum can decide they're going to make more or less Ethereum on any given day. Ethereum is run on a proof-of-stake network, which was a nightmare to move over to. It is an inflationary currency. And at any point that they need more, they can just make more. Like, it is not the same thing. And it doesn't have the far-reaching things that Bitcoin does as far as a universal kind of understanding of what you're looking at. It's not digital gold, right, if you want to use that term. I'm not going to talk about XRP. It's a shitcoin. Now, I do want to say, I've asked this question, and I don't get a good answer from any of the ETH people. And that question is, but what does it do? And then what shuts them down is, other than function as the mother asshole to more shitcoins and develop technology that it allows for the exchange of one shitcoin into another shitcoin. So, and other than enabling the altcoin casino at a high level, which many of its clones now do as well, like Cosmos, et cetera, what does it do? I don't really get an answer. I get a lot of, well, here's what it could do. But what does it do? The purpose of the system is what it does. Is there a place that Ethereum might be better than Bitcoin to do a thing that's a noble thing to do? And the answer is, in my opinion, maybe, probably not, but maybe. And it would be in DAOs, decentralized or autonomous organizations. So to be able to have functionally a company with distributions automatically paid, smart contract managed, so that that organization can function and be very difficult for government to interfere with. But this is all theory. Like every place I've actually seen something, well, we made a DAO for real, and here it is. I'm like, you could have done all of that with a corporation probably way more efficiently. Way more efficiently. And doing it as a DAO does not, you know, disobligate things like reporting revenue, et cetera. And if the DAO itself is going to, like, have a line of credit, you're going to still have to incorporate and open a bank account, shit like that. And all of these, like, these ideas about how we could, like, run a cafe on it and one person pays and then the money goes there, like, these are all great, but nobody's doing it. And I don't see the government going, oh, it's a DAO, we'll just let it go. Or might they? The one way this could change is if they decide, the elite, that they like this idea themselves and they want to incorporate the use of DAOs in their own entities, and they do some things to clear the way for that use to make it less friction against the state, not from an obligation, again, to pay your taxes and things like that, but to function, like to carve out a place for the existence of DAOs as a new form of corporate entity. Here's the thing. You can do all that shit with Bitcoin. You can still do all that shit with Bitcoin. But what I'm going to say that would go to the advantage of Ethereum and Ethereum's backers here is, but Bitcoin wasn't meant to do that. And Ethereum kind of was designed with the intent to do exactly that. So that might be the one place it carves out a niche. If there's going to be a number two in crypto that's going to matter, but it's not where I would want my money. I think there's a huge potential, though, for an incredible altcoin season attached to this. And I'm not telling you to go out and buy any shitcoins. But I'm saying if you've been waiting for your exit, this cycle may be a great place to achieve that exit. Especially, like I said, those of you who are holding straight up Ethereum. And people, why are you still holding it, Jack? Because I bought it for 93 cents a share a long time ago. And every time I sell it to do anything with it, because it's all KYC and shit, I am not playing that fool's game. And so I have to take a hit on huge capital gains. Almost 100% of it is considered income as a capital gain long hold right now. So we'll see. We'll see. But I think this might be leading up to something, I'll say it, something crazy like $10,000, $11,000 Ethereum this cycle. And at that point, yeah, I think I'm paying the tax and I'm getting out of that position. So we'll see. And I'm not saying I won't do it before or hold some of it longer or whatever. I'm just saying, like, I think it's a gamble, but I think it's a – this changes the calculus in that gamble if you're already holding it. As far as where any surplus capital that I'm going to put into a crypto asset goes right now, going forward, and it has been for years now, it's Bitcoin only. Just my thought, right? And Builder keeps saying, sell ETH at 4K. You sell it at 4K, bro. You go ahead and you do what you – I don't tell people when to sell. I just tell people what I'm doing. Next, as I predicted, and this is something that's really caused a lot of consternation among people that I interact with on Nostr, especially one of my special friends there. Russia has begun to take significant new territory. And you might wonder, Jack, how did you know that was going to happen when you said 3 weeks ago that was going to happen? Because I actually have some inside sources, and some of these sources are directly in our own government here in the United States, who knew this was going to happen and confirmed that it was going to happen because I started seeing things that told me it was going to happen. And when I went to those sources and said, I believe this is about to occur, these people are the kind of sources you have that what they say is, I can confirm that. I can deny that. I can neither confirm nor deny that. That's real sources that will generally not give you information, but they will act as a sounding board for information that you have acquired elsewhere. And universally from the people that I would trust to answer that question for me, this is going to happen and everybody knows it. But I also said that we're going to end up in a position now where they're going to start, like, the Democrats will be stupid if they don't do this. They're going to blame the Republicans for it. But I'm also going to tell you what happens next. But I want to play this journalist, not his whole video here, but just a little bit of his video here for you to see some of what has been going on in recent time.
The village of Andreevka has been liberated, according to the Russian Ministry of Defense, along with the town of Klisheevka, something the announcement that came just yesterday. And both cities, or rather both villages, they are considered to be on the flank of a major city of Artomovsk, which has been under the Russian control for just over a year now. But the development, while the names and the villages themselves might not be that important and that not that major, but in terms of the fighting or just what's going on the battlefield there, they are crucial. The first reason it is so, basically they are the moments of glory for the Ukrainian army, because they are one of the few localities that were taken and captured by the Ukrainian army over the course of their last year's counter-offensive. Now, the Russian troops have already retaken the village of Rabotina in Zaporozhye. Andreevka and Klisheevka have been retaken once again. And, it basically leaves the Ukrainian army with nothing to show for the tens of thousands of deaths that occurred during their counteroffensive back in 2023. Now, speaking of the importance of this small village, basically, right now, the Russian army are advancing on another town in the Donetsk region, the town of Chasovyar.
So, and this is just going to continue, and what's actually happening now is that pretty much wherever Russia decides to take territory, they're taking territory. And the Ukraine is now investigating something like 30 of their own officers for what they're terming as dereliction of duty. And basically, some of these areas, what's happening is when the Russian forces move in, the Ukrainian forces are just withdrawing. And there's a reason they're withdrawing, because they do not have the capacity to put up significant resistance. They just don't. They just do not have the capacity anymore. They do not have the manpower. They have plenty of, we didn't have enough weapons. They have plenty of weaponry. Now, a lot of the weaponry we gave them is becoming completely and totally dysfunctional. So we gave them, for instance, a tremendous amount of these artillery shells. And you don't really think of an artillery shell, poof, boom, right? You don't think of that as a smart weapon. But we've built into, like, our artillery rounds, we've built GPS capability into these things. So what used to be dumb artillery, you needed some poor forward observer out there telling you adjust fire or whatever, have become incredibly precise precision weapons, because these shells are able to directionally control themselves in flight and make course corrections on the way and hit with pinpoint accuracy, as long as they can talk to a satellite that tells them how to do it. And, of course, the Russians have figured out how to jam that technology. So now they're taking these incredibly expensive artillery rounds, and they're shooting them off, and they're getting a very low ROI on them because of jamming. And this has been done with far more sophisticated weaponry that we've given them. Now, these are lower generations of this equipment, so I don't know what that would mean if we were using state-of-the-art U.S. military equipment with anti-jamming capabilities, but that's not what we're giving to Ukraine. We're basically cleaning out the cupboard with Ukraine. We're creating a whole bunch of new orders for all the defense contractors to refill our stocks and cleaning out the cupboard. That's what's happening. I don't know. I don't care if you like that I'm telling you that or not. I mean, I got all this bullshit when I put out that video from a couple of special kids over on Noster about how, like, I guess you can't talk about all the Russian propaganda because your paycheck is hinges upon, you know, telling this narrative. As though you guys want to hear me say this. As though my audience isn't full of people who are more right-wing than left-wing, pro-America types, like as though my audience isn't full of people that hate it when I talk this way. And then when I pointed that out, they said, oh, so that's the demographic that you're going after. I'm not going after anything, dumbasses. I just speak the truth as I see it. And people that don't get triggered and run away, listen and decide what to do with that information. That's really hard for people to understand, I guess. But I think what's more important is what comes next. So the U.S. managed to throw another $60 billion at Ukraine. Most of that money has not actually been released to Ukraine yet, but it will be. It's in this, like, there's a little bit of weaponry here, a little bit of weaponry here. It's just kind of like this unspent money for Ukraine. We, at some point, have only two things that can be done with Ukraine. Full-on risk World War III and start putting NATO troops on the ground to continue the fight, or accept that it's lost. Ukraine cannot infinity defeat Russia in this conflict. No way, no how, no chance, because they haven't. They haven't. Again, I know some of you don't want to hear this. Russia has exercised tremendous restraint in this conflict. Doesn't mean they're good. Doesn't mean I'm wrong, right? I'm telling you, like, if they wanted Kyiv to be leveled to the ground in rubble right now, it would be. And it's not. They have kept most of the conflict in this strip, which is all they said that they wanted. And they really didn't want that. But we backed an 8-year civil war on their border. And if you check this out, you'll find out that it's true. Don't believe me. Go verify it. Go verify that we made a deal, right, called the Minsk Accords on behalf of Ukraine. Ukraine didn't even really participate in that. And we said to the people of this region, you can have within your own country this form of autonomy. Like you have your kind of your own little internal republics. You're still part of Ukraine, but you can govern yourselves. Kyiv won't be telling you what to do. It was all a lie. It was all bullshit. It was never honored. And we kept supplying the Ukrainians with weaponry to go bomb these people, and they couldn't beat a bunch of ragtag resistance. They're not going to beat one of the most professional militaries on the planet. They're not going to do it. They are now drafting people that are too young for draft under their existing rules. They've just changed them. That are too old for draft. They've been drafting women for over a year. They're out of people. Remember when the our media told you Putin literally is running out of bullets? Bullshit. Russia is one of the most capable weapons manufacturing nations in the world. In fact, they're the number one weapons manufacturing nation in the world. They're making artillery shells for 25% of what we are. That's a difficult thing to defeat when you're passing your weaponry to people who are really not schooled on how to use it. This is what else is happening, and this is confirmed as well. Ukrainian recruits, or draftees, I should say, conscription, people are conscripted, are getting almost no training at all. And they're getting sent straight to the front. So we either are going to have to put boots on the ground and fight this war against Russia, which I think that our chicken hawks like to talk like that, but they don't actually want to do it because they know it's not in their best interest to do it. They don't care about all the people that would die. They care about the fact that it would not be in their best interest to do this. Or you have to then decide how do we extricate ourselves from this? How do we spin this? And this is what I think is going to happen. Before fall, there will be true peace talks, real peace talks, where both sides actually talk instead of people that aren't actually making the deal talking about it hypothetically, which is what all the peace talks have been up till now. And they're going to have to come up with some way to save some face in this. Some form of like a promise by Russia not to take, you know, some other piece of the country or something like that. Some pathway to EU, maybe Ukraine becoming part of the EU, but not part of NATO. Like somehow they're going to have to get some spin that something good came out of this. They got to get Zelensky out of there because his own people want him dead. There's more and more stuff going on internally that looks an awful lot like kind of the German military felt about Hitler toward the end of the war. Yeah, his generals are lying to him, things like that, right? And then now we have these commanders who are just simply hauling ass back home. But now they're going to start throwing those guys in like military prison. That's what's going to happen next. They'll probably throw some of these commanders into the stockade. They'll give them a dishonorable discharge, and they'll throw them in military prison for 5 years or something like that. When you put people into a no-win fight, no way that they can win, and they know they can't win, and they don't absolutely, emphatically believe in what they're fighting for, they surrender. Happens every time. And if surrendering by turning around and retreating results in your own side shooting you or arresting you, what do you think comes next? Rifles up, walking out in front of Russia and saying, we're done. Mass surrender to the enemy. Because it's better to surrender to the enemy than run home in that scenario. People will take the path that is most beneficial for them. It's what the Germans did. Do you hear the Germans did as World War II became evident that, like, this is not going to end the way you thought it was? They started marching toward the Allies because they're like, fuck, we don't want to surrender to the Russians. That's going to suck. So they ran to the Allies to surrender. History's rhyming. And the Russians have made it very clear. If you surrender to Russia, you'll be treated well. You can be given a place to go live. You can join our side of the fight, or you can just quit. But we're not going to throw you in prison. We're not going to shoot you. You trust Russia. I don't trust, and this is the hardest thing for people to understand. I don't trust anybody. And the fact that I don't trust anybody is why I'm saying we shouldn't be involved in this at all. I'm back to what this is for real. This is you give an asshole who knows he's going to get his ass kicked a couple big goon security guards, and he goes into a bar and he starts shit with people because he knows his goons are going to cover him. If he didn't have his goons with him, he would never start the shit in the first place. That's what's going on here. And this is all part of leading up to today to what I'm talking to you about our empire falling apart. Military losses. This is a military loss. But here's the big thing. Here's where I go out on a limb and tell you what I think is going to happen. When this ends, they're going to steal as much of the Russian money as they have locked up now as possible. Some of these things that have been, you know, basically seized as part of the TIPS thing, Russian oligarchs, yachts, all this shit. They're going to seize as much money as they can, and they're already signaling this. Russia must pay for what it has done, and they mean with money. Ukraine will need to be rebuilt. That's being said. BlackRock said, we have a plan. We know exactly. They don't know shit about Ukraine, but they know how to rebuild it. Because all they know is they want money. They want money. There's no way that you can run more money through more money laundering than a third world shithole like Ukraine with a very corrupt government with contracts. You can move all contracts and energy resources. You can move all kinds of money. And as long as money moves, they profit. But here's going to be the problem. Here's going to be the problem. You watch this shit go down just like I'm about to tell you. When they go to do this, well, who's going to do the work? Who's going to build the new buildings? Who's going to do all the road projects? And I don't mean the engineering level high-end shit. Now, that'll be BlackRock and, you know, our defense contractors and all that. We'll bring the brain power. I'm not the guy that's going to take a shovel and, like, fill the ditch in. The guy that's going to ride on the little vibratory thing to make the road path down, right? The guy that's going to walk the steel beam and pop the rivet in. They don't have enough men left right now for reconstruction like that. Where are you going to get them? See, there's all these countries in Europe that thought it would be a great idea to virtue signal and bring in massive amounts of immigrants out of North Africa. And now they're like, well, you know, say it loud, say it clear, refugees are welcome here. Like, yeah, but that didn't work out really well. It's a mess. And there's more of them want to come in. They're going to Ukraine. Not all of them. But they are going to bring in massive fuck tons of immigrant labor into Ukraine, dilute the remaining population of Ukraine, and turn it into a true third world shithole. That's what they're going to do. Now, you could say it's not going to happen, but All we got to do is sit back and watch. And I guarantee you right now there's going to be like special immigrant programs to bring these workers in. And like France is going to be like, yes, yes, we love them, but go, go, go. Right? They had half of Paris in flames a year ago from some of this shit. This is a way out, and it's a way to use that force to completely destabilize that region and put it under the control of the West, which has been the intention all along. If you do it by getting them to be part of NATO, you control. If you do it by getting them to be part of EU, you control them. If you do it by fucking it up so bad that only you can control and fix and channel it, works too. That's what's coming. Massive immigration to Ukraine for work. And at the same time they're doing this, they will make it almost impossible for the Ukrainian men who hauled ass and are living in other countries now to go home, even though they say they need them, because they'll say that they're traitors and all of this happened and they're going to blame you and me and those people and all the people who were smart enough to go, hey, this isn't going to turn out the way we thought. Let's make the best of what we have. It's their fault. It's their, not the United States government who caused the whole fucking thing to begin with. Not the WEF puppet that is Zelensky, right, that got rid of elections. And, I know some of you don't believe this, but I'm telling you right now, the reason that Zelensky canceled elections is because Zelensky knows full well if there was an election tomorrow, he'd be out the fucking door on Thursday. He would never win. If he thought he would have won, he would have went ahead and had elections. There's no reason the country can't run elections. The only part of the country they can't run elections in is where the battle's raging. And by the way, all those fucking people, they would vote against Zelensky. They hate Zelensky. They can't stand Zelensky. They want to be part of Russia. I know you can't believe that, but it's true. They do. They are the opposition. So even with the opposition written out of the election, he can't win because people now are like, I want my life back. I want my life back. See, people don't like war when they have to deal with war. You know who likes war? Americans like war. Do you know why we like war? Because we don't have to deal with it. We go to war for 20 years. Nobody here gives up fucking anything. Right? We went to war in Iraq and Afghanistan combined for over 20 fucking years. There are people whose fathers were deployed in the first rounds of Afghanistan. They weren't even born yet when their fathers deployed, and they deployed. That's how long we were there. That's how long we were there. That long. To lose. Let's talk about something else before I get into this fall of empire, six commonalities. The Trump verdict that's due in this week. So let me go out on a limb and tell you what I think is most probable. Hung jury and the judge rendering a guilty verdict. That's number one. Number two, hung jury, but the judge will not accept it and tries to strong arm a guilty verdict. Okay. Three, the jury actually does its job and says there is no, even if they hate the guy, there's no crime here because there isn't. There is no felony there. They haven't pointed out. And number four is a straight up conviction. That's the order I think it works in. And I'm going to tell you what I think the results are for the left are bad, 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 and bad. I don't think you get a good verdict at this point if you're on the left. I mean, let's just start with the least likely. They get a guilty conviction. Well, they are all going to be like, oh, he's a felon. This will never survive this appeals process. They're probably not going to be able to put him in jail on a conviction like this for any serious amount of time. It is possible that this judge will pull some real bullshit. Something like a 6 months house arrest with an ankle monitor. It's just to keep him from being able to campaign and put him under a gag order that extends for the duration of that period of time, right? Something like that. Aaron says the Secret Service met with NYPD today to discuss what they'll do if the judge orders them taken into custody. And they did do that. And that's a possibility that we'll have to see where it goes. But let's say that happens. They convict them. They throw them in jail. They put them under house, anything. So all that's going to do is make Trump more in the minds of the people being just like them. The people who believe that this is a crime will never vote for Trump anyway. Their votes, let's get back to the politics discussion with the LP. You only worry about what is possible and probable in politics if you're trying to win. So all the people that will never vote for you, you don't give a fuck what they think. They can party, they can get drunk and say, woohoo, we got the orange man. It doesn't matter. They're not going to affect the outcome of the election. The people who have their votes moved. I think you move more people to the Trump column with a guilty. Do you know what else I think you do? You move more of them there with a not guilty. He was right. They really did frame him. How the hell did he win that? And the media is going to spin that as a rich man bought his way out of trouble again. Even though they had the deck so stacked. I don't think they can win. And I think it is a symptom of where we are as an empire in decline, that we have this going on. This is a fucking banana republic move. If you don't believe that the Federal Department of Justice, in conjunction with Garland and the Biden administration, coordinated this multi-pronged attack, then I just think you are either really, really, really stupid, and in that case, you probably wouldn't be capable of understanding what I'm saying if you're that stupid. What you are is in massive denial of reality here. And if this were reversed, if this was a Democratic former president of the United States that this was being done to, the same people that think it's totally okay would be shrieking that it's not. And in that case, they would also be right. This is not how we handle things in America today. When you take a crime that even if the underlying crime is a crime, if it really was a crime, which is this money was paid to this woman to keep her mouth shut, which is totally legal to pay somebody not to talk. Okay? It was done through a lawyer that works for you, and you called it legal fees. That's the crux of crime number one. Inappropriately bookkeeping entry of the classification of the expense. Yeah, that's the crime. The problem with it is that crime is a misdemeanor. And by the time Alvin Bragg, who ran on the policy of I'll get Trump, which you shouldn't even be able to do in my opinion, right, got elected, that crime, if it were a crime, if it really should have been called something else, because I don't know what you call a thing you pay your lawyer to do if you don't call it a fucking legal expense, okay? But that crime had hit its statute of limitations as a misdemeanor. In other words, you can't try the person on the crime. It's been too long. Now, the federal government looked at this and decided not to prosecute it. Federal prosecutor said, I ain't prosecuting this. This is I'm not going to win this. The state of New York and Alvin Bragg decided that if the misdemeanor were committed in the intention of committing a felony, that the state of New York cannot prosecute. This is how stupid this is, okay? So what they're saying is if Trump committed election fraud at the federal level, they acknowledge the state of New York has no right to prosecute that crime. But if he committed the misdemeanor with the intent of committing the federal felony, the state misdemeanor became a felony. The problem is they haven't explained what that is. What does that look like? Which one of the federal felonies was broken? It's not spelled out in the indictment. It wasn't spelled out in court. And the jury is not being advised of any of this by the judge. This is so bad that win, lose, or draw, the Democrats lose in this. And that is when you're getting to the end of an empire. When you get to a point where a former politician can be prosecuted by the new politician in an attempt to influence the next election and stifle the power of the rival, and this is done wide out in the open and gotten away with, we are not a republic. We're not a democracy. We're not any of that shit. Like, we're not a democracy. We're a republic. We're a constitutional republic in the form of a representative democracy. That's what we're fucking supposed to be. You can change the order of those words around, but that's what it is. We use a democratic process to elect leaders in a republic. We're not any of that shit, though. When this can be done to anybody, no matter how much you hate the guy, you think I like the guy or something, right? I mean, you're out of your mind. But there is no crime here. And this is what the end of empire looks like. And what are the six commonalities of empires in collapse. I'm going to read this list, talk just a little bit about each point, and you tell me which one doesn't apply to the United States as we know it right now and in over the last 20 years. Number one, economic decline. Empires that are going into collapse, the first thing you see begin to occur with them is an underlying economic decline. And it doesn't necessarily mean that big companies don't make money anymore. It's an economic decline for the population. The middle class collapses to the point where even if you are middle class, it doesn't mean anything anymore. What I refer to that is downward class migration. Does anybody want to make the case that the United States hasn't had an economic decline over the last 20 years and what it means for the average person on the street to be an American? What is the value of being an American economically? I think you're in major denial if you say we are not in economic decline. When people can't afford to go to fucking McDonald's anymore, you're in economic decline. Not that I think you should be, but I'm just saying. Like, when you don't have a dollar menu really anymore for McDonald's, you've got a problem. You've got a problem. People are paying more to buy trucks now than I paid for my first house. My first house was a three-bedroom, two-bath house. I bought it in 1998. I paid $84,250 for it. So when I say people are paying more for trucks, I'm not talking about like a Ferrari or some shit, right? I'm talking about like a Chevy, like a 2500 HD. Costs more than I pay for my first house. People have payments on vehicles now that are more than my house payment on the house that I bought 11 years ago. We are in economic decline. We are absolutely in economic decline. Military defeat. When empires are getting ready to go in decline, they begin to have series of military defeats, and they always spin them as they didn't really lose. We've been on this cycle since World War II. We haven't won a war in reality since World War II. And I know some people say we didn't really win World War II. The Russians won World War II. The British won World War II. No, the Allies fucking won World War II. Who sacrificed the most and did the most damage? Russia did. Because Hitler was stupid and he went into that meat grinder hard. But in the end, Nazi Germany was defeated along with the other Axis powers by the combined efforts of the Allies. And that's the last time the United States took part in winning a fucking war. We didn't win Korea. We technically could have. When North Korea invaded South Korea, if we would have said enough of this shit, pushed them back into North Korea and stopped and reestablished everything at that point, it would have been one of the most decisive and quickest victories of anything that ever happened. Instead, we thought it was a good idea in winter to push the North Koreans all the way up across the Yellow River and bring China into the war with human wave assaults and eventually end up back where we were, thereby failing our objective, military defeat. Vietnam, I mean, you could call Korea a tie. Vietnam's a loss. What was the goal in Vietnam? Maintain sovereignty for South Vietnam. Go look at a map. We lost. You could make a case that we won the Cold War, but look at Europe today. We lost. First Gulf War. I know we won that. Did we? Since it led to the second Gulf War and a complete clusterfuck in the Middle East now? Even worse than it ever was? Not to mention Afghanistan being in the hands of the Taliban. 20 years to replace the Taliban with the Taliban and give them like $70 billion worth of U.S. weaponry. They're fucking Taliban flying Blackhawks over there now, guys. We lost. We lost. Just cause in Panama? And we turned around, thanks to Jimmy Pena, and gave the whole fucking canal zone back to the Panamanians, 10 years later? We lost. What have we won? We won the battles. So what? So what? This is Libertarian Party thinking. We got to have our own nominee. Can't win. And you got nothing. We got nothing out of this. We've got nothing. Proxy wars like Ukraine? Losing the shit out of that. Our involvement with Israel? Can't even make a pier stay up and not sink. $300 million can't pull off a temporary pier. We are failing at every military objective we have. We can't make our recruiting bogeys now, right? We can't even get enough people that want to serve now. So I'm going to say military defeat. We can check that box. Anybody wants to argue with me, I won't be a dick to you. Go ahead and explain to me how we didn't win. Jeff says defense contractors win the wars. Well, yes, they do, but that doesn't mean our military won. You can have both. You can have the defense contractor and the U.S. military win, but that's not what's happening. Yeah, the defense contractors are getting wealthy. Political corruption and inefficiency. I'm going to tell you a story. Long, long time ago, not very far away at all, right here in the United States, there was a Native American city on the banks of the Mississippi River and one of the confluences of one of the tributaries. I don't remember which one. It was a very successful city. There was a huge population of citizens and an elite government both. And it stood for a very, very long time. And to make things easier, this secondary tributary that came down to the Mississippi Valley, they rerouted the entire river, tributary river, through the middle of the city. And that way they could go way upriver, cut down trees, and float them right into town and build houses, and everything worked. Until it didn't. Until the river decided, fuck this, I'm going back to where I used to be. And it began to destroy the city. Okay? The government of this place had everything that they needed to fix the problem. Instead, they went on these huge construction projects for the elite to benefit, but not to fix the underlying problem. What became important to the elite in this city, which was like a city state, right? This was like a little nation, was to maintain power. And they put all their effort into maintaining power and none of their effort into fixing the problem. And this happened about 2,000 years-ish ago. There was no white man here screwing it up for them. They did it all by themselves. Does that sound familiar? Does that sound? And if you read 1491, America Before Columbus, you'll read that story and many others that are just strikingly similar to it. If you look at some of the Mesoamerican tribes in Central and Northern South America and the inter-family fighting and all the stuff that went, it's the same story over and over again. See, Cahokia is what anyone that can golf is saying, and that is the town I'm talking about. It was Cahokia, if you want to look it up. Cahokia, if you want to look up and see what I'm talking about. It's well-documented history. But whenever empires collapse, this is always what happens. You end up with very corrupt political leaders, and you end up with no efficiency in at least doing the things that you tolerate the political leaders for, like keeping the trains running on time and the roads in good repair. We got to have my roads and my schools, right? Like when you get the political corruption and you don't even get good infrastructure, an empire's about to collapse. Is anyone here going to tell me that we don't live in an era of unprecedented political corruption and inefficiency, specifically with the federal government of the United States and most state governments? I don't think anybody wants to tell me that. Okay, so that's 3 for 3. Social and cultural decay. Some of the things that are going on, like the things that they're doing with our children and telling these kids that are like kindergarten, first, second, third grade age, that your gender is fluid and you can pick anything you want at a time when their minds are very susceptible to this is debauchery. This is debauchery. I am all for anybody living any way they want. If you're a dude and you want to shave your legs, wear a dress, and put makeup on, and have titty implants done, and you can make yourself look like you're a woman, and you walk past me, I'll probably think you are, and I don't care when you tell me you're not, as long as you leave me alone and let me live my life my way. I am one of the most tolerant people to other people's social vices that there is. But doing this with children is sick. Doing this with children is sick. Creating a society where one of the easiest ways for a woman to become wealthy today is to do porn on the internet is debauchery. Debauchery, right? The fact that the market's that big that these randos can just do this and actually make $300,000-$400,000, in some cases a month, if not a year, is debauchery. And if you go into the story of every major civilization's collapse, there is social decline, cultural decay and debauchery behind the scenes. Roman Empire, it happened. Ming Dynasty, it happened. The great days of the Japanese Empire, and they decided they're going to invade Korea to get to China, there was also tons of debauchery going on behind the scenes. It's always depravity behind the scenes. And then what happens is the culture's morals begin to decay because there is no common agreement as to what it means to be an American or a Chinaman or a Roman or whatever. It stops meaning anything, which is why cultural Marxism always attacks from that vector. Always attacks from that vector. Okay, so social and cultural decay. Anybody going to tell me we don't have that? Nobody. Okay, moving on. So that's 4 for 4. External pressures and invasions. There was a time when the United States had at least this much balls. So-and-so nation says that what you should do is, and we said, yeah, that's nice, go get fucked. We didn't even care what other nations said we were supposed to do. We didn't care. I'm talking about the government, the people, all of it. We just did. That's nice. You do what you want in your country. We'll respect your right to do so. But as far as telling us how to run our shit, go get fucked. Now we're worried about everybody's opinion of us. Everybody's opinion is important. Unless they're one of the few people that we don't align with. And have you noticed that every single global leader who opposes anything that the United States and its subsidiaries say we want is a dictator? Every single one of them is a dictator. The second they step out 1% from the agreed upon script, they're a dictator. Putin, dictator. Xi Jinping, dictator, but he's a good dictator, sort of. He's a dictator when we don't like him, but he's a good guy when we do and he's paying us money. And we have this incestual economic agreement going on, right? Right? He's a dictator, but Trump should have put tariffs on him, right? Because that was a step out. Like, we are in this position now where we care way too much what other countries think, and we've allowed way too much power, which is why we care. Right now, this minute, healthcare in the United States could grind to a damn near halt if China simply stopped selling us certain raw materials. And if China and India did it together, if they could stop fighting long enough to take us on, the two of them together could completely collapse much of our public infrastructure through undermining things like healthcare. Why have we allowed this to be the case? Why have we chosen to allow this pressure to be the case? And then the invasion thing. If you don't think what's going on the southern border is an invasion, you are a moron. You are a moron. When you start talking about millions of people from all over the world coming to the United States completely in opposition to the law as to what it says to enter this country, you are a moron if you do not call that an invasion. And stop talking about these poor dreamers and shit. These people are 40, 50 years old, some of these people now. I'm talking about the people coming here right now. They're not coming here from Mexico. I mean, some are, but mostly it's not Mexicans. It's not you know, Colombians. You know what we have coming in now? Chinese nationals. Chinese nationals. Pakistanis. Afghanis. Right? I just listened to the thing. They asked this one guy. He's at the border. Just walked across. He's in the country. He's going to go do whatever. He was getting an Uber or some shit. Right? They got to the point now they don't even wait around for Border Patrol anymore to pick them up. They just get an Uber and go wherever the hell they want. Right? So this guy, they said, you know, it's illegal. He said, yeah, no big deal. Where are you from? Pakistan. Okay, how'd you get here from Pakistan? He flew to Brazil. How the fuck did he get from Brazil to the southern border? You're going to tell me that these, and why are you here? To get a better job. Because there's jobs in the United States. Wait a minute. This impoverished person in Pakistan was able to get from freaking Pakistan to Brazil. And I don't know if you know anything about Brazil. Brazil's a big place. You can't walk from South America to North America very effectively. If you get on a road in Panama, and I've been there, and you just keep going south long enough, you end in the jungle. There's no road connecting Colombia to Panama. Doesn't exist. It's jungle. How in the fuck are these people getting to South America from Asia and Africa and then walking across the southern border if there is not massive amounts of money being spent to support this? This is an intentional destabilizing invasion of our country. And I know what you're going to say, Jack, you're supposed to be an anarchist. Didn't you know that Samuel L. Konkin himself was an illegal immigrant? Right, listen, I'm going to put this in a way that you can just take and you can accept it as reality, or you can go into denial. You can have a welfare state or you can have an open border. Pick one. Pick one. The day we shut down the welfare state, the day we stop giving these people undue influence to this country that they're coming to, the day we stop throwing kids out of school so we can use the school to house them, yeah, right? The day that we make it, you come here and you sink or swim on four open borders. Since we do not have that, and since I do expect the government to follow its own rules, at least pretend to, then I expect that the law we have that says there is a way and means by which you can come to this country to at least attempt to be enforced. And we're not doing it at all. This is an invasion. And you can't bring this type of disruption to a country without completely destabilizing it. And not all invasions are military. In fact, the most subversive invasions that have crippled empires have always been like this. This is not new either. This is not new either. In fact, it's exactly the textbook for how we took North America from the natives, isn't it? We just kept bringing more and more people and making more and more people until we outnumbered them. It's what we did. Now it's being done to us. And when I say we, I don't mean that you are responsible for what your great-great-great-great-great-great-grandpa may or may not have done. If you're like me, when somebody says we, you can accept it as just what you mean by the people that are currently here. But if you're going to get literal with it, my family didn't come here until the turn of the last century, late 1800s, early 1900s. So my family didn't do shit, but we're part of it. It's exactly what we did. We kept bringing more and more of our people here until we controlled the area that we invaded. And there were military components to it, but most of it was just people getting on a boat, getting off, and starting a new life. Our country is being destroyed externally and internally both, and our empire is on the verge of collapse. So, external pressure and invasion. I think we got that one. The last one, environmental and health crises. That's every empire that ever collapsed. There was an environmental degradation, and generally the place that it hit the hardest, annual agriculture. You know what led to Egypt's true collapse, the end of the age of the pharaohs? Drought. A couple hundred years of drought. Northern Egypt becoming the desert that it is today. That's what really led to the collapse of Egypt. It was the breadbasket of the world before that. You don't think we have an environmental crisis? I know some of you are like, Jack has finally taken on and believed the global warming stuff. No. We are in massive environmental collapse in this country, primarily because of the way that we practice agriculture. And the health of this country has never been worse. How much type 2 diabetes do we have? Right? What is the health of the average American compared to the health of the average American 50 years ago right now? It's shit. So it's both environmental, and the environmental is always correlated to the decline in health of the country. What happens today, too? People like start these whole movements about getting healthy and eating good quality food, getting out in the sun, lifting weights, getting in shape. And what happens? The media attacks them. It's racist to work out. Apparently, black people can't go to gyms. Hispanic people can't go to gyms. And the ones that do, they're racist, too. They're the black face of white supremacy because we have a nation full of debauchery. See, all of these things are linked together. So here again, you tell me anything we don't have. Economic decline, military defeat, political corruption and inefficiency, social and cultural decay, external pressures and invasions, along with environmental and health crisis. What are we missing? I don't think we're missing anything. And the only way people try to get out of this then is say, well, the United States isn't an empire. If the United States isn't an empire, then there never has been an empire. See, what we've allowed to happen is people to tell us what words mean instead of thinking for ourselves anymore. So what I mean by that is empires are bad, okay? Right? Like, we've just, like, you know, Empire Strikes Back. Obviously, Darth Vader is part of the empire. The empires are bad. Not everything about empire is bad, especially if you're, like, a citizen of the empire. An empire is a nation that largely controls far more than it has within its own borders proper. That's what an empire is. A nation that can influence decisions around the world is an empire. A nation that has spread out its military to be able to reach any point in the world within minutes, honestly, is an empire. I don't know that there is any other empires in existence in the United States today. I mean, in the country, in the world today. China's not an empire. That doesn't mean they're good guys. Russia's not an empire. Neither China nor Russia have the capacity to influence the world that we do the way we do. And if you're down between those two, the one you might could make a case for, and more so, is China. China has tremendous influence in Africa and South America, and they're buying tremendous influence here in the United States. They're the real empire-on-empire adversarial relationship. They have their own problems right now, too. They have their own problems in a big way, bigger than you know. Honestly, you know who probably the next empire is? Probably India. India is probably the next global empire, which is why China and their relations are so strained. Maybe we'll do a show on that someday, but our days are numbered. Our days as an empire are numbered. You can't do this forever. Think about how little we actually produce today, the United States. What do you, and this idea that these nations are all backward or something like that. If you want to see the most incredible marvels of engineering, go look at the public works projects being done by China and India in their own countries. Engineering that boggles the mind, some of like the dams and things like that these people have built. Incredible feats of engineering. And when it comes to the capacity to invade, you know, China could throw 100 million bodies inside the borders of the United States proper and not blink. Not blink on how it would affect their population. External pressures and invasions. We have got to begin. We have got to begin thinking differently in this country if we want our individual freedom protected. Your government's not going to do it. You have to get away from these big cities. I know I say that all the time, but you have to. You have to at least get out of like the influence zone of these big cities. And you have to start building your own relationships because there's going to be no real alternative here at all. With that, I'm going to wrap up today. I really appreciate you guys spending time with me today. I want to remind you guys that one of the ways you can help support the show is to do your online shopping beginning at tspaz.com. That's T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. The item of the day I have for you is we're going to go back to Vivor here and talk about this product maybe one more time this year before we just say it's kind of late in the year and maybe it's fall and we talk about it again. But they're galvanized raised garden beds. They still have the 2 foot deep 4x8s on sale for $96 if you have a registered account with Vivor, and you still get 5% off with my discount code. But the big thing is, and I've said this, many of you do not need a 2 foot deep raised bed. 1 foot is plenty. They have the 1 foot deep versions of these beds on sale right now for $47 a piece. That means for under $200, you can put in 4 4x8 beds. And for most people, that's going to provide the vast majority of the produce that you need, at least through the growing season. So definitely check that out. I really hope that you guys enjoyed today's show. I'm glad to be back and actually completed a full show. We've got an interview show tomorrow. I don't remember who that is because, no, I do not have my paperwork for that yet. I got to get set for today. And it'll be a short week, but we are back and on the attack. Guys, take care. I'll catch you with another one tomorrow. Are they going to bail you out or just run you around? They said you should have a house the American way.
dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have.